When you need to work quickly and confidently across different apps and platforms, consistent quality communication is key. Whether you're writing documents, emails, or presentations, you need Grammarly. It's an AI writing partner that helps you get your work done faster with better writing. It's always there to help because it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can get more done no matter where you're writing. Grammarly is the gold standard of responsible AI, trusted by millions of professionals for 15 years. It gives you personalized writing suggestions based on your audience, goals, and context, plus tone suggestions to help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
So we've been discussing the chaos in the Republican House. We are joined on the line by Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. So on Friday morning, the House voted on debate rules that advance a series of foreign aid bills to the full House for final passage on Saturday. Broad bipartisan support for these bills, 316 to 94. But there are people, as usual, screaming and crying about it. Speaker Johnson, thanks so much for joining the show. Great to talk to you.
Ben, great to be with you. Thanks for all you do.
So why don't we start by talking about what's actually in these bills? These bills, as always, are not perfect. It turns out there are these things, and they are called Democrats, and they exist in the House, and they also exist in the majority in the Senate, and also one of them is sitting in the White House able to veto things. So what is in these bills that is good? What is in them that's bad? Why are you advancing these bills to the floor?
Well, we're at a point of pivotal decision. I mean, this is a dangerous time on the world stage, as you and I know, and Israel is in great jeopardy fighting for their existence. Ukraine is close to being overrun, and they're estimated to be out of ammo by the end of this month, literally, which would allow Vladimir Putin to roll through the country, take Kyiv, and set up on the borders of NATO countries. Of course, Iran and its aggression of Israel has continued, and Xi is watching this from China, and all of the axis of evil is empowered. So what are we to do? We're in the midst of this dynamic where we have divided government, and as you noted, the Democrats control the White House and the Senate. So we in the House here with the smallest majority for the Republican Party, smallest majority in U.S. history, one to two vote margin on any given day, we have to address these matters. We have to meet the moment. And so the House is fixing the Senate supplemental bill, the foreign aid bill that was sent to us a few months ago, with better policy and better process. And so what we've done is we've taken, for example, the Ukraine funding elements that are controversial, of course, on our side. We've added a loan instrument. We have added the Repo Act, which is the use of corrupt Russian oligarchs' seized assets to support the effort there. We've added oversight, accountability, and a strategy shift to force the White House to give us the information and the end game and all the rest. We have an amendment process, so we can address each of these measures on their own merit in four separate bills instead of having them sandwiched together. And everybody can vote their own will and their own conscience and their own constituents. That's the way this place is supposed to work. And we included tough measures on Russia, China, and Iran, including sanctions and some other innovations. So a very important change in both the process and the policy. And if we had not done this, Ben, and this is very important, we would have had to eat the Senate supplemental. If we had not taken this step, there would have been a discharge petition. And that means that a handful of Republicans would have crossed over and gotten on board with the Democrats to force it out of my hands and make us take the Senate supplemental as is. That was not an acceptable outcome. And this is the best possible outcome that we can achieve.
You know, Speaker, that last phrase that you use, best possible outcome that we can achieve, that's the one that so many members of sort of the House Freedom Caucus's right have been focusing in on. They suggest that there is a better deal that could be made. If only there was the will, then suddenly Democrats would collapse on a bunch of these issues, or suddenly there would be an Israel-only aid bill that would go forward without any sort of humanitarian aid to Gaza, or maybe the Ukraine bill could be pared down much smaller than it currently is. But you're the one who's actually in the negotiating room. Is there a lot of wiggle room here with Democrats that's been left?
There's not. And part of the reason for that, Ben, is that they know that our House Republican conference is not sticking together right now. There's a lot of a division and difference of opinion. And, you know, that's part of the process. Democracy is messy. But when you're in a negotiation and you literally have the smallest margin in the history of the United States Congress, the other side obviously knows that. And they're watching the dissension among our ranks. And that takes away our negotiation ability. Look, on the Ukraine piece, this is really important to point out. You know, there's a lot of angst about, you know, quote unquote, sending more money to Ukraine. But 80% of the funds that are in this package for Ukraine are literally to replenish American weapons and stocks and facilities. This is America's defense industrial base. This is building weapons here at home and refilling our stockpiles. Really, really important thing for us to do. Ukraine is in a position where they very likely would fall. And so this is going to allow them to at least hold the line. And I believe, Ben, that President Donald Trump is going to have another term in early next year. If this is continuing to that point, I think he's the one that has the strength to go in and negotiate a peace in this. But not if Russia rolls through the country. I mean, this is really important. As I said in a press gaggle here the other day, to be blunt, I would rather send bullets to Ukraine than boys, American soldiers. We don't want boots on the ground. We're not the world's policemen. If we can invest this small amount right now and achieve the desired outcome, that is better for us in the long run. And it saves us a lot of money and, of course, blood and toil.
We'll get to more on this in a moment. First, everyone thinks mortgage rates are extremely high. That's not entirely true. Mortgage rates are much lower than the average credit card rate of 22%. Think about how much interest you'll pay on that credit card if you only make the minimum payment every month. If you're a homeowner, a cash-out refinance with American Financing can help you pay off that debt and lower your monthly expenses. The mortgage interest is tax-deductible, and American Financing saves homeowners just like you an average of $854 a month. Their salary-based mortgage consultants will show you how much you can save every month with no upfront fees and no obligation. You might even close in as fast as 10 days and possibly delay 2 mortgage payments, giving you a greater savings upfront. A credit card debt is legitimately like the worst 8-ball to get behind. You can help avoid that. Don't wait another day to get the financial relief you need. Break free from the cycle of living paycheck to paycheck. Call American Financing at 866-721-3300. That's 866-721-3300. If you call today, you might not have to make next month's mortgage payment. That's 866-721-3300 or visit AmericanFinancing.net. NMLS 182334, NMLSConsumerAccess.org. It's honestly bewildering to me why there are so many people in the Republican Party who don't seem to understand or want to understand that strong American allies forestalls direct American action. That's the history of America's foreign policy. When we have weak allies who are unable to take care of themselves, very often we end up sending our own troops, sending our own resources in much greater numbers than would have been the case if we had simply supported our allies from the outset so that they were strong enough to actually withhold America's enemies. But I'm hearing, I've yet to hear any Republican actually explain what the alternative to, for example, aid to Ukraine would be. Now, I've heard some people in the Republican caucus call them principled libertarians who just say that we should spend no money at all. Okay, that's consistent, although I think that it does not have the virtue of wisdom. But that's not a lot of members of the Republican caucus. Many of the people who are sounding out in the Republican caucus and in the commentariat about aid to Ukraine can't seem to express why exactly it would be in America's interest for Russia to actually overrun Kyiv, which would be the predictable result if, in fact, no aid gets moved to Ukraine in the middle of this.
I think you stated that very well, and you're right. They don't have an answer because there isn't one. And I'll point out, too, to my real frustration. I mean, some of my colleagues who are the most adamantly opposed to this and who have in some senses, mocked the arguments of why this is so important have not availed themselves of the defense briefings that are available here. They've not gone to talk to the generals. They've not gone into the confidential classified briefing on exactly what the status is on the ground. And they're making monumental decisions with global implications, not completely informed about the facts. And I think that's a dereliction of duty. And I've said it as much, and I'm not naming anyone, but there are some people that have just refused to go in the skiff. And I think it's a dangerous thing. Look, you and I are children of the Reagan era. I grew up. I'm older than you. But look, I believe in peace through strength. I believe in what Ronald Reagan said. It does not mean that we're the world's policemen. It does not mean that American troops should have boots on the ground everywhere. That's not what we're for. But to your point, Ben, and you've said it well, a strong America is good for stability around the globe. What does that mean? It means the perception of a strong America. We're the last great superpower. We're the greatest nation in the history of the world. It's not even close. We're the most free, most benevolent, the strongest, the most powerful. And if we don't act like it, then terrorists and tyrants take over. The reason that Iran and China and North Korea and Russia right now are acting so provocatively is because we're projecting weakness on the world stage. Joe Biden's foreign policy has been an absolute disaster. And that's what's got us in this situation. And if we do this little bit of investment here, we can stem the tide, hold them off, hopefully, until we get a new president. And that day cannot happen soon enough.
You know, Speaker Johnson, one of the things that has come up in this context, obviously, is the ridiculous motion to vacate. Obviously, you inherited a set of rules that were originally negotiated by Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who then had his speakership vacated by some members of the Republican caucus, who never really specified why McCarthy was doing such a terrible job, but they just decided that he had to go. And then he couldn't actually get enough Democrats to vote with him to preserve his speakership, or he couldn't get enough Republicans to vote with him to preserve his speakership, and he ended up ousted and then leaving Congress. Now you have similar group of people, smaller it seems, who are attempting to challenge your speakership. They keep threatening a motion to vacate. I noticed they haven't actually brought one formally yet because I think that they are afraid they're not going to get nearly as many votes as they keep trumpeting with regard to the media. These are unworkable rules. I mean, right now, the situation, as you mentioned, in the House of Representatives, that you are presiding over the slimmest majority for the Republicans in modern history. And that majority could theoretically be thrown into complete chaos by a couple of attention seekers at any time. That those rules, I've been pushing for you to try to change those rules. Is that coming? Is there going to be a move to go back to what was a sense of normalcy, which is that you needed a significant percentage of the caucus to actually challenge a speaker in order to oust a speaker, and then go back to what is the way the Republicans used to govern, which was the Hastert rule, which says that you don't bring forward a bill unless a majority of the caucus supports it. By the way, again, worth noting, a majority of the Republican caucus supports these foreign aid bills. They do. The rules package that just went forth was voted by Republicans 151 to 55. The notion that a minority of Republicans ought to run the House of Representatives seems bizarre to me.
It is bizarre, and it's not workable. It really undermines the way the institution is designed to work by the founders, and it's become a problem. Look, we're in the age of the modern Congress. Newt Gingrich famously said a few days ago that being Speaker is now impossible. I challenged him on it. He's a friend, but what Newt was suggesting there is that we now live in the age of the 24-hour news cycle and social media. And so every member of Congress has their own, you know, media outlet and platform, and they can go online and tell the American public every 5 minutes what they're disgruntled about and why they don't get 100% of what they want. It makes it a real challenge to, you know, to get things done when the margin is as small as ours is. But look, on the motion to vacate, it's not something I walk around being concerned about. I can't. We need to unify this conference, and we have to do our jobs. And we cannot send the House into chaos in the middle of an election season. I mean, obviously, these are commonsensical notions. You can't show to the country that we can't keep ourselves together and then expect them to vote for us to keep and grow this majority. And let me point out why that's so important for the obvious, if anyone's has a question about that. If we don't have a majority in January in the next Congress, and Donald Trump wins for president, which I believe he will, the Democrats will impeach him in the first week of his office. They will try to investigate everyone who even thinks about serving in the cabinet. They'll subpoena every visitor to the White House. Everybody in the president's orbit will need their own army of lawyers. That's where we are in the country. And we can't allow that to turn this disastrous policy around. Foreign policy, domestic policy, every metric that's a disaster under Joe Biden. We have to have the majority in both chambers, the Senate and the House. We have to have the White House. Ben, I think we're on track to do that, but we can shoot ourselves in the foot and take the victory away from ourselves if we're not careful here.
Yeah, Speaker Johnson, that is, I think, the main point, is that if Republicans wish to govern and actually make the sort of major changes that are necessary, they are going to have to run all three elected branches of government. They're going to have to run the Senate. Republicans have a good shot of winning back the Senate, given the map this year. They're going to have a much larger majority in the House. Right now, frankly, none of this would be a problem if Republicans had an additional 15 seats in the House. The truth is that the entire House would have been run differently if Republicans had an additional 15 seats in the House. And if Donald Trump is the president, I mean, the reality is that in a presidential race, you know what he's not going to want to have to deal with? A completely dysfunctional Congress that Democrats are going to be running against, including President Joe Biden. So the idea that the Republican conference should actually, you know, do their jobs as opposed to grandstanding for the cameras in the name of a purity that they never seem to achieve, that is absolute foolishness. So, Speaker Johnson, I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing. I appreciate it. I think it's good for the country. And thanks so much for standing strong in favor of an actual strong America on the foreign policy stage.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. Great to hear your voice and glad for all your work. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Speaker Johnson. Really appreciate it. Are you tired of the lies and the twists of the mainstream media talking points? Yeah, me too. Join me in my newest series, Fact, where I dismantle and bring truth to this tiring mainstream agenda.
Burgers are one of the most popular foods in America. You've probably eaten one recently, and you're definitely craving one now that we're talking about it. Make this summer one to remember with Good Ranchers. Right now, listeners will get free Wagyu burgers for a year. If you haven't had their American Wagyu burgers, I was just telling people here in the office, you're definitely missing out. My mouth is watering just thinking about it. Simply go to GoodRanchers.com and subscribe to any of their custom curated boxes filled with 100% American beef, chicken, pork, or wild caught seafood. Use code DAILYWIRE at checkout to claim your free American Wagyu burgers for a year. Not only is this a $400 value, but you'll also get a free bacon butter gift that's the perfect bacon topping for any burger. And in case you needed any other reason to support Good Ranchers, they support Paralyzed Veterans of America. Every order you make saves American farms and directly supports American veterans. Change the way you buy your meat today. Go to GoodRanchers.com and use code DAILYWIRE to claim your free burgers for a year and support veterans this Memorial Day season. That's GoodRanchers.com. Use code DAILYWIRE. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.